Welcome to episode 2 of Speak Beastie for January 3rd, 2016.
I'm Shannon Mickelson.
I'm Ariel Taransky.
I'm Aaron Schwartz, and today we have our special guest, Lizzie Sudlow. Tell us about yourself, Lizzie.
All right, so my name's Lizzie. I am from Belmore, New York, which is Long Island, which is not Manhattan, which is not New York City. So the down part of New York. I am a hybrid house of a Gryffindor and a Ravenclaw.
Nice.
I am MuggleNet's creative content specialist. And I also work retail on the side, selling lovely shoes to everyone.
Well, I'm really glad we have someone from New York, considering this is a Fantastic Beasts podcast, and that's where Newt is going to be in 1926 for the movie. So welcome, Lizzie. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. Very excited.
So for this week with the Phoenix Register, we have just a little bit of news. We didn't cover the plot synopsis last time. Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them opens in 1926 as Newt Scamander has just completed a global excursion to find and document an extraordinary array of magical creatures. Arriving in New York for a brief stopover, he might have come and gone without incident were it not for a nomad, American for Muggle, named Jacob, a misplaced magical case and the escape of some of Newt's Fantastic Beasts, which could spell trouble for both the wizarding and nomad worlds.
Dun dun dun.
Yeah. I think with our discussion last week about the trailer, these are things that were definitely made evident in the, what was it, the announcement trailer?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it was called.
It's not a lot of new information. I mean, it came out before the trailer, didn't it? But even then, it wasn't a lot of new information. It just kind of puts everything together.
And even with the inclusion of the nomage word, in parentheses, American for Muggle, like, they're trying to separate it a little bit from the British series, obviously.
I'm so glad we finally have that announcement teaser, though. Because I first, like, read this synopsis, I didn't think it sounded that exciting. But then when it finally was, like, in front of me, I got very excited.
Yeah. Yes. And the way it was done, I think, was really nice, too. I really enjoyed that.
I do wonder about in here, it says misplaced magical case. So does he lose the case? Is that before or after Beast's escape?
See, I almost wonder if when Porpentina's asking, was it opened? I don't think it was opened by Newt, necessarily. Maybe it was, like I said, I think I said this last time, he opened it just a smidge to see kind of what was missing or if it had been opened before. Like, maybe there was some sort of charm. Like, you know how you leave, like, a hair in your journal to see if someone had opened it?
Yeah.
Maybe that kind of, some sort of indication that it had been opened by not Newt.
Yeah, so maybe someone stole it or he accidentally left it somewhere.
I was thinking, like, the classic two suitcases that look the same.
Oh.
And you, like, you're in Grand Central or whatever, and Jacob and Newt are in the same place. They sit down next to each other or something, and they have their suitcases next to each other, and they pick up the wrong suitcases, and then Jacob opens it and goes, whoa, you know, beasts. <Yeah. laughs>
Grand Central would be a very bad place to accidentally let out a beast. That'd be very horrifying for anyone who's been to Grand Central.
Well, he probably wouldn't open it at Grand Central.
And he only opens it just a smidge.
Just a smidge, so, I mean, yeah.
You know, it's just like a beast that can destroy that building that Graves was standing in. It's not that big.
Allegedly.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what I'm thinking. I'm putting money on the look-alike suitcase motif.
I like that.
And that would also, it would make more sense for why Jacob is brought into this situation and into the wizarding world, because he can't just stumble upon it like, oh, that would be a great way to, like, literally stumble upon it, is, like, the suitcase.
Yeah.
The Newt case. But speaking of our Newt, exciting news for Eddie Redmayne and his wife, Hannah Bagshaw, who will be expecting their first child. So congratulations to those two.
Aw. So cute.
A little baby.
I wonder what they'll name it. Hopefully something better than Newt.
Will the baby be here before the premiere? I don't know, like time-wise.
Probably.
I'm just saying, if the baby's born, I hope they dress it up for the premiere. Like, put it as like a little niffler.
Oh my god.
Yes, please. Eddie, if you're listening, we have expectations.
I'm not telling you how to do your job, Eddie, but just a suggestion.
So, as we are recording this, it is Boxing Day, which is a very important day for many reasons, but as we all know, the number one most important reason is Pygmy Puffs do what on this day? Nobody's gonna answer that?
They sing.
Thank you. Yeah. Singing Pygmy Puffs on Boxing Day.
I can hear them right now.
I want to know what they hear like. I want to know what they sound like. I think of Jigglypuff, though, because Pygmy Puff and the singing. Oh, man, I just made a reference. I'm sorry.
We're bringing it back to Pokemon. We can't Pokemon get away from Pokemon.
Every episode. Pygmy Puffs are just like little Pokeballs, aren't they? They're so cute.
They're just fluffy and little, and Jenny's got her
they're
cute
like
little...
They're like what Furbies were supposed to be, but that never happened, because they're terrifying.
Forget Furbies. Goodness. Oh, someone's probably going to listen to this and be like, well, we hate Ariel, she doesn't like Furbies. Great.
Yeah, we just lost our Furby sponsor.
Sorry.
So, the Fruper Foundation just did a thing with Pygmy Puffs. I'm pulling up the page right now, so I don't get it wrong. But you could click on one of two Pygmy Puffs and learn about the Pygmy Puff and pledge to adopt an animal. And we actually got an email from Tyler Starr of the Fruper Foundation. Lizzie, you want to read that?
Absolutely. And so for those who have not heard of the Fruper Foundation, it's an animal advocacy group that focuses on empowering young witches and wizards to get active for animals. So think kind of like an adult spew kind of thing.
Nice.
So Tyler Starr writes, I wanted to email because we at the Fruper Foundation have been throwing around a theory that Eddie Redmayne might be trying to play Newt as a vegan. When the original Entertainment Weekly feature came out, there was this quote from Eddie about choosing Newt's wand, and I quote, I was like, well, Newt wouldn't have anything leather and wouldn't have anything made from a horn. It would be something simple and wood-like, unquote. As you may all know, vegans abstain from all things made of animals, so we think that this might be a hint that Eddie is trying to portray Newt as a magical creature-loving vegan. So what do you guys think about this? Is Newt our first known wizard vegan?
I think that would be pretty cool, and it would make sense because he is so animal-centric.
But what would his wand core be if that were the case?
Yeah, how can you... I don't know much about making wands, but how can you make a wand... What kind of core would it have that would be magical enough without coming from a certain kind of animal? Because I think the only non-animal core we've heard of is from Vila, but that's still a human. They're still, like... a humanistic creature that are able to obviously reproduce with humans because we have Floor who is half Vila. So I'm not sure if... I feel like if he were to get one from a Vila, he would ask their permission, obviously. But it's... I wonder if it still goes with his kind of thinking that is... I don't know. I'm not entirely sure... I feel like that's something that needs to be explored, definitely.
Yeah.
I think there's just a lot of possibilities about the concept of wand making as it is, because did Newt, as, let's say, 10, 11-year-old, know that he was vegan? Did he have these instincts back then so that when he went to go get his wand, he could check off a little box that said, no hair, please, you know, something like that? You know, because you don't, you know, the wand picks you.
Yeah.
You really don't get to choose, you know, what goes in. It's not a potion where you throw a little bit of that and a little bit of this and hope a niffler comes out of it. So if he, you know, if he is portrayed as a vegan, that says something interestingly about as you get older, are you able to get a new wand, or and when you do, are you able to construct it, or, you know, have preferences on what you do and don't want in there?
See, I think that with wand lore, Ollivander says something to the effect of those who know wand lore know that the wand chooses the wizard, which would imply that there are those who kind of aren't as savvy with that. So some wand makers might just say, oh, what do you want? You want a powerful wand? All right, I'll make it for you. And then they make it to order, but it never really, like, clicks with you.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
He went to Hogwarts, so there's the idea that he did go to Ollivander's, because Ollivander's is a very, very old wand shop. So that's where he would have had to go. And if he did have these requests back then of a different wand when he was an 11-year-old boy, you have to almost wonder, is the wand as effective for him as it absolutely could be if he just let the wand choose him? Or maybe the wand that chose him was vegan. We don't really know. So, oh goodness, this is just a whole different...
That's true. There are some potions ingredients.
Yeah, it could be from...
like a wolfsbane, blah, blah, blah. But not wolfsbane, but something else. There are magical plants.
Yeah, that's true.
Do you think, you know, there's the possibility that Newt made his own wand?
Hmm.
And maybe politely asked a beast for a core? Some beast that he was connected with?
You mean like a Niffler?
Yes.
I'm thinking in a totally different direction when you said that, because when you said to ask politely, my mind jumped immediately to hippogriffs and to the fact that his mother bred hippogriffs. So he could could have a connection with that, and he could have obtained a feather, or what they have feathers and then the fur on their hindquarters. He would more likely get a feather. Mm-hmm.
Imagine having a pet hippogriff.
Oh my
gosh.
That'd
be so cool.
A hippogriff farm. I can't imagine.
You have to bow to them every time. You just want to go say hi.
Do you think having a ton of hippogriffs in one place is that kind of like having a bunch of cows? Do you have like a Niffler that herds them?
I don't know if it'd be a Niffler.
Yeah.
I just really want there to be more Nifflers in the world. I think it's a decent possibility that he would be vegan.
I would really love to see that portrayed on screen, especially something that's in the past, because obviously the vegan movement has become much more prominent right now. Mm-hmm. So to see that in like 1920s New York and all the different ways he'd have to find food and be able to eat everything, that would be interesting. I really hope they go that route.
Yeah, that's where my mind went. Food.
Yeah. So for today's main discussion, we will be talking about the book itself that is inspiration for the trilogy to come, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them by Mr. Newt Scamander.
Who's that guy? He's got a weird name. Yes, I just got this book for Christmas yesterday. I had read it before, but I didn't have my own copy. So this is very exciting.
But how did you read it before? Was it like at a library?
No, my sister had it, my older sister. And for a while, I had stolen it from her. I think when she went to college, I had it. Because I've read it a lot. I really like it.
Oh, okay.
But then one day, she waltzed in and took it away from me.
No.
So, I know.
That's tragic.
I mean, it was her copy, but whatever. So, I was like, I need my own copy. So, I asked for it for Christmas.
That's good.
Especially since it was like, oh, I'm going to be on a Fantastic Beasts podcast. I should have something to consult.
I actually didn't get the book until about a month ago, because the last time I had seen what it was, the whole like three books, it was like the Beetle the Bard, Quidditch Through the Ages, and Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. This was years ago. I already have Beetle the Bard, Tales of Beetle the Bard, and I wanted to buy the two Quidditch Through the Ages and Fantastic Beasts, but I could only find Fantastic Beasts. I'm like, well, I'm going to be on a podcast, so I guess I might as well go ahead and get it. And I've just been like reading through it over and over, just cover to cover. But it's a short book. It's not like, I've been reading this big, long encyclopedia.
It should be longer.
Oh, I agree.
That's what I'm saying.
It does contain...
It probably will be in the future.
Yeah. It does contain some good information. Even the foreword from Dumbledore himself. It's really interesting because it's written in his tone of voice. And it's cool how you can kind of get that from him. Even though obviously it's all J.K. Rowling. It does pose the question... How do Dumbledore and Newt know each other? And will we see Dumbledore in Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them? Because he was somewhere in his 40s, around 1926. Mm-hmm. So we could very well see a young Dumbledore.
Yeah.
Which also opens the possibilities of a new Dumbledore actor, like a more younger Dumbledore.
Oh, yeah.
Which could be interesting.
Then the War of Dumbledores will get even worse.
The Dumble Wars.
But yeah, it does. His foreword starts with, I was deeply honored when Newt Scamander asked me to write the foreword. So they do obviously know each other. I mean, why would you ask the head of a school to write it? Dumbledore is a very knowledgeable man, but what makes him qualified?
Yeah, because I very well, if I wrote a book, I wouldn't ask like my elementary school principal. I don't even know anything about them anymore. To be like, hey, you want to write a foreword for my book? And I know Dumbledore's much more than an elementary school principal, but that was just like the best comparison I could really come up with.
Yeah, I guess it depends on how big Dumbledore is at this time when it's published. Because if Dumbledore is a big deal, then yeah, it's great to have an impressive foreword in your book as a selling point. It's like, oh, well... Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them by Newt Scamander. Forward by Albus Dumbledore. Ooh, like, yeah, I'm in. Dumbledore is endorsing this? Yeah, I'm totally in. So it could be a selling point if Dumbledore's a big deal at that point.
Well, the forward is supposed to be for, you know, this specific printing of the book, not for the first printing.
Oh, I thought okay.
Somewhere I read it was like the 52nd edition.
Yeah.
I'm not seeing it now, and I can't remember where I came up with that number.
I was wondering when Dumbledore became headmaster. He wouldn't have been headmaster when Newt was there.
No.
Oh, that's true. Because
he wasn't headmaster when Tom was there.
Dip it was.
1957 is when he was appointed.
So wait, what was Dumbledore teaching before he became headmaster?
Didn't he teach Transfiguration?
I think so.
That's what I thought, and I was wondering how that would come back to Newt. You'd think he would relate more to the Care of Magical Creatures professor, whoever that was at the time.
I don't think we know that one, yeah.
So this is interesting, because then you have to take into consideration, well... Newt doesn't have this relationship with Dumbledore of professor and student. It would be more they kind of bumped into each other in the wizarding world somewhere, especially since Newt eventually worked for the Ministry of Magic, and there was a lot of talk of Dumbledore, like people wanting Dumbledore to be the Minister of Magic. So you have to wonder if maybe somehow like politics got involved in some way, or they just... Dumbledore's name was just being thrown around, and Newt... Oh, man. They could do so many things with this now that the math shows that they wouldn't have been at school together, necessarily.
Well, didn't they want Dumbledore to be Minister of Magic at one point?
Yeah.
So maybe they, like, somehow interacted at the Ministry?
Yeah.
If Dumbledore was popping in and out of there?
Maybe.
That could very
There's
well
so
be
There's so
many
it. Possibilities. It's wonderful.
I'd love to just see them bump into each other, just for, like, no reason, really. Just, oh, hey, wizard, right?
I could definitely see...
Just in New York.
I could definitely see Dumbledore not being in the first movie, but, like, popping up in the third movie.
Because it's definitely suggested.
Or the actor pops up in the first movie, and they never address who it is or anything. Ooh. They, like, that actor is in the background at some point, and then later they have it in the third one, and then some fan goes, wait, that guy was in the first movie, in the background, waiting for a train.
Dumbledore's just waiting for trains.
Entertainment Weekly did suggest that there would be a familiar face or two. So Dumbledore could possibly be that familiar face. We can't rule him out, but at the same time, we can't definitively say it's going to be him. But I think the forward gives us something.
I think he's the most viable.
Yeah. Well.
He's the most probable option.
Yes. Well, during the introduction of Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, we get to know a little bit more about Newt and his background. It says Newt began his interest in beasts around 7 years old. And I loved that because it was J.K. Rowling and number 7 appearing once again.
That's my favorite number. I'm wearing a shirt with 2 sevens on it right now. Oh my gosh.
It's fate.
Almost like I planned it.
Oh. Ooh.
Anyway.
Newt also goes on to say, I have visited lairs, burrows, and nests across 5 continents, observed the curious habits of magical beasts in 100 countries, witnessed their powers, gained their trust, and on occasion, beaten them off with my traveling kettle. So I thought this was interesting because he travels to so many places. So eventually the trilogy could lead us very well away from New York. It could lead us all across the world. I think that could be something so interesting that they could do.
Oh, yeah.
And show us all of the different wizarding communities across the globe, especially when he visits most of the continents with his traveling kettle, which I really want to see.
I know, I want to see the kettle so bad. But yeah, it's interesting. So he travels to all these places in researching the book, but I think the movie's supposed to start when he's kind of finished researching, because the book's supposed to come out in 1927.
Yeah, well,
so
he first started on the book in 1918. Mr. Augustus Worm of Obscurus Books commissioned him back when he was a Ministry of Magic employee. So it almost makes me wonder if we'll see this Mr. Worm character, if we'll see any flashbacks of Newt as a Ministry of Magic employee, especially since this we really don't know how much ground this first movie will cover. So the trilogy could end with the first book being published a year after. We don't really know.
Yeah, that's true.
But at the same time, we will be seeing, you know, the final year of his research. So there are many.
Yeah, you would think, oh, we're going to make a movie about Fantastic Beasts. They would go, well, we start at the beginning of his journey. But it's interesting. It starts very close to the end. So big stuff happens.
Yeah.
So Augustus Worm picks Newt to write this book. But Newt even says in the introduction that at the time he was just a lowly Ministry of Magic employee. So why would Mr. Worm pick Newt
hazing
to write this? Did you say because he's amazing?
No, I said hazing. It sounds hazing. Like hazing.
That makes just as much sense.
go deal with these horrible beasts all around the world. I would assume he's probably not going to get paid a ton for it if he's a lowly Ministry of Magic official at that point. So just to, yeah. Oh, yeah. You need something to do? Yeah. Go on a snipe hunt.
It says, I was then but a lowly Ministry of Magic employee and leapt at the chance both to augment my pitiful salary of 2 sickles a week and to spend my holidays traveling the globe in search of new magical species. So yeah, he's not getting paid much. I wouldn't be surprised if Mr. Worm was like, 3 sickles a week.
Yeah.
Doesn't that sound great?
Let's throw that extra sickle in there. You go crazy, Mr. Scamander. You travel the world. Sickles just jingling in your coat pocket.
The third movie is actually about, you know, Newt and Mr. Worm fighting it out in court because Mr. Worm's trying to take all the money for the book.
Ooh.
Ooh, that would make sense. A big, like, publishing issue.
Because he goes on, this book ends up having, and this is just, quote, present day with the 52nd edition being circulated. As Dumbledore's foreword says, it is continuously used by students at Hogwarts. Because even, like, Molly Weasley probably has a copy of this because she has to get rid of certain creatures. There's so many uses for this book in the wizarding world that Newt, he definitely had no idea what he was getting himself into. He just thought, okay, I'll get to write about a few creatures. And he ends up writing about almost all of the known creatures in the wizarding world, and this book becomes wildly successful. He gets to live out his dream life, basically. I think that it could have very well started off as something like Aaron was saying, just like, let's get rid of this guy. And then he goes on to do what he loves most.
Sounds a lot like J.K. Rowling, actually.
Aww.
When you put it like that.
Aww.
That's cute.
It's interesting because he says that he spends his holidays traveling, and I was looking back at the About the Author, and it says he was transferred to the Beast Division, where his prodigious knowledge of bizarre magical creatures ensured his rapid promotion. And it sounds like he's still working for the Ministry of Magic.
Oh.
Like, the 60s. So it's like he's writing Fantastic Beasts on his vacations.
That's interesting.
So I almost see it as he's in the Beast Division as his lowly Ministry of Magic employee, and then Mr. Worm's like, write this book! And then he slowly becomes more and more popular, and everybody's like, wait, this kid actually knows what he's doing. Let's promote him a lot.
That is interesting.
Let's promote him a lot.
Yeah, he went on to create a lot of laws. He even got the Order of Merlin, second class. He accomplished a lot, and that's something I wonder if they're almost going to do, if they only chronicle, say, a year or a few years in Newt's life, if they'll kind of do an epilogue a la Deathly Hallows style and show how he passed all of these laws and regulations and then got the Order of Merlin second class, and then they show just Newt and Porpentina sitting in Dorset with their three little... Okay, wait, I have a problem. Because they have their three little kneasels. Is that how you pronounce it?
Kneasels?
I said kneasels, yeah.
Dang it, I thought I was doing it right this time. Ariel can't Never. Pronounce words. Anyway, they're sitting there with their three creatures, and it makes me wonder what's going to happen with his Niffler. Obviously, it's going to die at some point, but did he just, like, give up on Nifflers completely? He's like, I'm not dealing with that kind of animal. Like, it's too much trouble.
How a Niffler is such a hassle.
Or maybe it's just, like, just because he's older and they're, like, kind of settled down now, maybe he... It disappointed me a little when I saw that.
Maybe he'll have his own, like, Niffler farm.
Oh my gosh, that would be so
Adopt
cute.
All the Nifflers. Because I, like, think of this book, and I think of it as part of your wizard starter pack. Like, congrats, you're a wizard. Here's Fantastic Beasts, here's History of Magic, and here's Standard Book of Spells Grade 1. Off you go. You know, because, like we were saying earlier, everyone probably has it in their house, so I just envision this book as like a staple of wizarding culture at this point. So hopefully by the end of everything, he was doing well enough for himself that he could have had an entire zoo to himself. Or not a zoo, but what is the word? Nope. Maybe farm.
I was thinking, like, I don't know why I was thinking the word retreat, and that's totally not at all. A farm sounds more likely. But I get what you're trying to say, Lizzie. Like, he would have this home for animals, for creatures, magical beasts, so to speak. Because I think for someone who loves animals so much, you go home and you want to be around some sort of animal. You don't want to travel the whole world, see all of these wonderful, amazing creatures, and go home to nothing. Like, at the end of the day, if I worked at, say, an animal shelter or even a zoo, I'd still want to come home to my dogs. I'd still want to see animals and pets. So maybe that's kind of what Newt felt. But Nifflers do sound kind of high-strung, so that's probably why he had a Niffler in his youth. And as he got older, he set that notion aside.
I kind of wish he would have gone on and pulled a Gilderoy Lockhart, but actually knowing what they were talking about, and, like, taught at Hogwarts for a few years as care of magical creatures.
Oh, that would be so cool.
That would have been really fulfilling.
See, I'm wondering if the setting of the movie is right around when he's finished writing the book, because it was first published in 1927, then why does he have a suitcase full of monsters in it? What could he possibly be doing with them at that point? Maybe he is opening a zoo or an exhibit or something.
Interesting.
Dropping them off at their natural habitat.
Yeah, or going around and dropping them off.
For all we know, he's...
So you, like, go around and pick them up and study them, and now he's taking them back.
He caught them all.
Oh, I don't think he would have trapped these creatures. I think maybe he saw some along the way and was like, this isn't where you belong. And
yeah,
kind of just accumulated them. And with so many creatures in that one case, naturally there's going to be, as shown in the trailer, there's going to be an escape. There's going to be some sort of havoc being wreaked. So I think, I don't think he would try to enclose these creatures or trap them in any way. I think there's a better explanation for it than just curiosity or selfishness. Because he was a Hufflepuff after all. And they are very, they are very good people for the most part.
Well, now that we've discussed Newt's life in the 20s, let's discuss someone else's life in the Time Turner segment. So we are going to go back to 1925, which is a year before Newt is in New York. And so in 1925 is when Bob Ogden arrests Marvolo and Morphin Gaunt for Morphin's hexing of Tom Riddle Sr., and Marvolo gets sentenced to 6 months in Azkaban, and Morphin is given 3 years. And then it is also in 1925 that Merope Gaunt, or Merope, I don't know if there is a standardized way to pronounce that, but she marries Tom Riddle Sr., and then the next year, she becomes pregnant, Tom Riddle Sr. leaves her, at the same time, her father comes back home from Azkaban, and he discovers she's left, and then he dies. And then in December 1926, she sells Slytherin's locket to Caractacus Burke for 10 galleons, and then on the 31st, she arrives at Wolves Orphanage, where she gives birth and names her son Tom Marvolo Riddle before dying. And as we know, that son grows up to be Lord Voldemort. So it seems like that would be a really big coincidence for this movie to be in the same year that Voldemort is born.
This entire time parallel creeps me out. I don't know about anyone else, because I have New York, I have a nice little Hufflepuff walking around with a little suitcase and his kettle, and all he wants to do is take care of these little beasts. And then on the other side, we have the Spawn of Satan emerging, and where everything is just going to fall apart in, you know, so many years. This entire time parallel is just messing with me right now.
Yeah, it's weird to think of these things happening at the same time.
Such good be happening with so much evil brewing? Ugh.
I wonder if this will play any role. Probably not in the first movie, but maybe in a later movie. If he goes back to London, maybe he will encounter young Tom Riddle.
Oh, goodness.
That would be crazy. I don't know, because Tom Riddle is born in 1926.
Yeah.
Like, that's, you know, that means that the movies for Fantastic Beasts would have to span a really long time.
Yeah.
In order to talk to or see a relevant Tom Riddle at all.
Yeah.
Because he's a creepy kid, but he's not really a creepy kid at Hogwarts for a while. So, and then he's just at Hogwarts. So, in what situation would Newt meet him?
Well, the only thing that I could think of coming up is if it spanned for a long enough time, like a little murmur about this Chamber of Secrets opening up, and, you know, this girl dying in a bathroom.
Ooh, yeah.
Just like a little something, like on the Daily Prophet, or just like something very small from his times at Hogwarts popping up. That would just, I would
Ooh,
have chills.
What if Newt goes to Flourish and Blotts, that's the bookstore, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so what if Newt goes to Flourish and Blotts for a book signing and signs young Tom Riddle's copy?
Wow.
That'd be pretty crazy.
That'd be creepy.
Just like a 2 second... He walks in and he's like, oh, and who should I make this out to? Tom Riddle. Oh, okay.
I was just like, what if he's like Lord Voldemort?
Yeah. How do you spell that?
That would just be crazy to think, you know, of a young Tom Riddle reading this novel and learning about all these beasts.
He would be learning about a basilisk.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's true.
It would be great.
Yeah, I could see him reading this. He wants to get knowledge.
See, now I'm glad Newt did not go back and teach Care of Magical Creatures, because theoretically, he could have been teaching a little young Voldemort, and we don't need that.
Mm-mm. No. Especially...
Yeah, it was already pretty bad.
Yeah. Especially with the way that his professors already handled him. Not saying that it all lies on, like, Slughorn and Dumbledore or anything. But they definitely did overlook a lot of young Tom Riddle's issues that should have been addressed. And I think what they just hoped for, like, when Dumbledore first met him, even, how he was like, hey, you're beating kids up and stealing their things. Don't do that. Like, be a good kid. And he was hoping Hogwarts would help him with that. And all it did was just make him so power hungry. And so it taught him how to control his power and how to control his magic. And he learned so much more. If somehow they never had the wizarding system to find out when a wizard was born and such, if he had been left at that orphanage, he would have gone through his life with that magic locked up inside of him. This is purely speculation, of course, but he never would have learned about Horcruxes or a prophecy or any of the things that transpired to make him become what he was, which was Lord Voldemort. So I think that that could be an interesting fan fiction for anyone who wants to write it, because I don't have the time.
Maybe there's an alternate universe where Newt did teach at Hogwarts, and then he just got Tom Riddle really interested in beasts, and Tom Riddle decided to pursue care of magical creatures instead of evil.
And then you have Voldemort riding in on a dragon.
Yeah, sure.
Well, speaking of interesting creatures, this week in the Newt case, what do we have, Aaron?
This week, we have the Fwooper. The Fwooper we mentioned earlier with the Fwooper Foundation. The Fwooper is an African bird. It's got really vivid plumage, oranges, pinks, lime green, that stuff. It's got really long tail feathers that have been used for fancy quills, and its song eventually will drive you insane. It is reported that Ulrich the Oddball attempted to prove that the Fwooper song was beneficial to your health, and he listened to it for 3 months straight, and when he tried to convince the Wizards Council that it was good, he showed up to the council meeting naked and wearing only a toupee that actually was a dead badger.
Oh, no.
So, yeah, it definitely makes you go crazy.
I think they're jumping the gun there, because how do we not know that was not beneficial to one's health to run around naked with a dead badger on your head?
You know, he might have
been
onto something.
He was ahead of his time.
He didn't have, like, a control group for that. You kind of need to, like, here's my life not running around with a dead badger on my head.
Versus,
yeah. So, Fwoopers are usually sold with silencing charms on them because their songs will make you go badger head.
I'm picturing the bird badger from Up. That's what I'm picturing right now.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Well, it's interesting because a Fwooper, I'm looking in the book, it's one of the few beasts in here with a picture.
Yeah, oh. It's like a poof with feathers at the bottom. It looks kind of like something that Dr. Seuss would draw.
Yeah.
I'm still seeing a bird from Up.
I wonder how big they're supposed to be. Because it could be as big as the bird from Up.
Yeah, true.
Or
I was just thinking more.
This looks angry. I don't want to mess with that.
It's like the Tasmanian devil of birds.
Yeah.
Well, it has a classification of 3 X's, which says a competent wizard should cope. So yeah.
I guess so Yurik the Oddball was not quite competent.
Yurik the Oddball is not competent?
I'm sure he gained that nickname after.
Yeah.
No, he just... His parents gave birth to him. They were like, you, Yurik the Oddball, that's what we'll name you.
Uh-huh.
You must live up to this name in all the ways that you can. Find a Fwooper. Listen to it for 3 months straight. Try to convince the Wizard Council that, no, it's all okay. But show up naked and, you know, wear a badger on your head. Make sure the badger's dead.
Yeah.
This is all in the dying mother's, like, last will and testament to her son.
My dearest Yurik.
Make sure that the badger is dead.
And then she takes her final breath. Oh, sad and funny.
Not to go more Pokemon, but this looks like it could be a really pissed Pokemon.
Well, I wonder if the Fwooper will be in the case.
Gosh, I hope not.
It's an African bird, so if he's been to Africa, Maybe.
Yeah, it's in the book. I always thought when I read it for the first time, I read the description without a picture because I didn't read it in the book. And I immediately thought of the Waida bird from Africa, which I don't know if you've seen it. It doesn't look as like poofy, but it's got super long tail feathers, just like a whooper. And yeah, the Waida bird, it's also remarked that people would take its tail feathers for quills and all this stuff and be really fancy. So if you get a chance to look up the Waida bird, it looks to me in real life, I feel like it would look like a really angry version of that.
How do you spell that?
It's Whydah. It's got a super, super long tail.
Ooh. So you guys think that, like, Jacob, you know, we have this case switch and Jacob opens the case and this bird flies out and he yells, "What the fooper?" I got it in there.
Ooh, you did it.
Okay. That's the podcast name. What the fooper?
If I was a no badge and a fooper came out of a suitcase and just started going nuts, yeah, I wouldn't leave that person alone either. I don't blame Jacob for trying to figure everything out.
Fooper used song. It was very effective.
It is interesting that foopers are sold with a silencing charm, and it says that the silencing charm needs monthly reinforcement.
Ooh.
Like, these poor foopers.
Goodness, you'd think there would have to be some sort of regulation on that. Like, okay, I get it, foopers and their songs, it's annoying if you listen to it for 3 months straight, but hey, these are things.
Hey, maybe we just shouldn't, you know, grab foopers and sell them.
Yeah.
How about that instead?
Because it sounds like animal abuse.
What is the charm that Hermione uses when they're, like, out camping in the woods so that no one else...
Mufleado?
Yeah, couldn't they have, like, used that instead? Like that, or is that a silencing charm?
Well, Mufleado creates a buzzing noise in everyone else's ear that, like, effectively silences the area. So instead of hearing the fooper making a bunch of noise, you'd hear, like, a muffled buzzing instead.
Well, maybe they could have done that for, like, a half-hour span just so it could get some, just, you know, get some words out.
Just let it out. I have to bring this back to myself in some manner, but I'm not a fan of silencing charms because that makes me think of Ursula and taking away Ariel's voice.
You're having flashbacks right now.
I am. I really am.
That was a rough time in your life when you were 15.
That's
well, yeah, I say free the foopers. So.
Exactly. We should make shirts. Free the foopers.
So
Fooper Foundation might have some.
Oh, that's true.
So for using, when sharing this podcast with your friends, make sure and use the hashtag free the foopers for this episode.
Or what the fooper.
Or what the fooper.
So that's it for this week. Make sure to tune in 2 more weeks to listen to some more news stories and send us your fantastic theories about the movie or the book. And thank you, Lizzie, for joining us this week.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for having me, everyone. This has been fun.
It really has been fun.
Yay.
It's been great to have you.
So if you want to hear more about Speak Beastie, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram with the title @SpeakBeastie. You can also find everyone on Facebook at facebook.com/SpeakBeastie. Or you can also head over to Tumblr at speakbeastiepodcast.tumblr.com. And exciting news, we are now on Audioboom. So check us out at audioboom.com/channel/speakbeastie. And if you've enjoyed this episode and anything else, please subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us a review. That way, you know, we can get the word out and continue to give you the best news on the Fantastic Beasts trilogy.
And Lizzie is a rotating host, so she will be back.
I will be back.
At some point, not sure how long.
Don't miss me too much, world.
Yeah.
I will.
So for this episode, I'm Lizzie.
I'm Shannon.
I'm Ariel.
And I'm Aaron.
Case closed. Thank you.
I can see him, like, sitting down for a meal with, like, Porpentina and Queenie, and they bring out some kind of meat, and he's like, oh, I don't eat that. And then it's really awkward, because they're like, what do we do? this is what we made.
This is, like, the time when Phoebe on Friends met Paul Rudd's character, his parents. She was,
I don't know.
Oh, no, come on.
No, I'm totally unfamiliar with Friends, so.
What? See, when you were saying that, I thought that's what you were referencing.
We are also not sponsored by Friends.